Welcome, everybody, to Caves and Scows West.
West.
Issue 5. So we're going to do some conversations about movies and Netflix and comics and whatnot. But first, how's everyone doing?
Good. I'm doing pretty good so far.
Anything exciting going on?
Not really. Glasses broke yesterday, so that was really sad. I know, right? They just fell off my face.
Like, I'm done with you.
They were pretty much just like, I'm done with you.
Yeah. Well, so that happens sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks.
That does suck.
Yeah. And I heard you haven't slept in, like, what, you were minimal sleep today?
Is that right? Yeah. Three hours.
Oh, that's fine.
I think is what you know how, like, when you set
You're still young.
Yeah. I mean, not if I keep this up. You know how, like, you set an alarm on your phone and it, like, pops up with that blurb and it's like so and so hours until the alarm goes off. Every time I see that, I'm like, god damn it.
Only 3 hours until it goes off.
Yeah,
that has certainly put me into bad situations before where I'm like, well, that means I need more sleep, so I change this time. That life doesn't work that way. When you're supposed to be there at a certain time, you have to be there.
I wish when you hit the snooze alarm on your alarm, like, the whole world just stopped for like 10 minutes. You know, that would be really nice.
I would actually snooze at that point. I've actually disabled the snooze function on my phone.
Really?
Because of,
it's worthless.
It is worthless. I mean, just set a second alarm.
That's true. That's a good point. I like that.
Yeah. And let's see. The only thing new is I've been trying to write our intro rap.
Oh my gosh, when is this happening?
And outro rap.
I mean, it was already
outro rap.
Outro.
Yeah, that's new.
I had the little spark of inspiration to do that.
Are you a planeswalker now? You're spark ignited.
Ignited. Pretty much. Nice. I am white, so, you know.
Oh, Gideon
planes,
is
planeswalker. Sorry, I thought you said planes. I heard planes.
Wow. It's gonna be a fun one today.
It's gonna be one of those episodes. Issues.
Yep. Alright, well, I'm gonna stop talking now.
Yes, now that you're beet red.
Yeah, no longer am I white.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Oh.
Jesus.
Oh.
Not anything fun, exciting?
Yeah, sure. I'm trying to optimize my downtime, what little of it I have.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, I should talk about the fact that I was at the Denver Comic Con.
How did that go?
That was a blast. It was overwhelming, though. There was a cacophony of just sounds and people. It was pretty intense. Right?
Like, did you work only, or did you get a chance to walk around?
No, I got a chance to walk around. Actually, I got a signature, got a couple prints, you know, just saw some friends from school, from the Art Institute of Colorado, to see their booths, see that they're doing it, you know, so.
That's awesome.
Who did you get a signature from?
Mateo Scalera, who illustrates Black Science, had done a Batman issue from the New 52 that I absolutely loved, and I just like his art style in general, so that was definitely one of those for me that was important to go to. I like the heavy anchors. But yeah, on downtime, I've been... My wife and I finished Game of Thrones, so we're caught up.
I feel like everyone's been on this journey with you.
Right?
And now it's finally concluded that you finished the season.
So that's finished season 6, ready for... For season 7, which actually starts on my wife's birthday, so, you know, a little birthday gift to her.
Oh, nice.
To jump up and down and be excited about what's going to happen in Westeros. The other thing I've been doing is I've been playing Hollow Knight on Steam.
The heck is that?
Nice.
Hollow Knight is a Metroidvania-style game, so it means it's a side-scrolling 2D game with a interconnected world. I can't call it, like, an open world, but the map connects multiple areas through multiple entrances, and you build the map as you gain new abilities and can backtrack and progress. But yeah, it's been absolutely amazing. I mean, I can talk in depth about that. I think it's a worthwhile game that everybody who likes that style or likes, like, classic gaming needs to play. I'm 8 hours into it, and I feel like I haven't cracked the game at all.
Really?
Like, there's so much content. There's like 40 bosses, and most of them are optional, so you'll just, you know, be able to jump and avoid, like, the area that you'll play in, or the one of the challenges I was playing yesterday, it actually, it's a key-sensitive acceptance. So you have to go in and say, yes, I'm going to do this battle, or you can just go, no, I'm going to go the other way and leave. So I don't know if it'll be required to progress forward, but at this point in time, it doesn't look like it. But you sort of... The replay value is obsessive. You know, it has that 2D feel where you continue to want to be better at the game. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think I died 15 times and I still have not beaten that boss area, but I'm not going to move on. I have to. I have to figure out what my strategy is to beat these guys. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's really good. I feel a lot of times when video games are too easy, you almost don't even want to play them. Because you have no reason to, like... progress or get better or anything like that. So
yeah, I think YouTube has certainly made that worse, because if it's something that's like a story driven game, you're like, I'll just watch the story on YouTube, because somebody's probably like cut the game together. So really it has to be engaging, difficult, or just really well put together gameplay to want to really
That's a good point. I was actually just playing a game last night, and I invited some buddies over, and there were two different types of games that we were going to play. Mm-hmm. One was Until Dawn, and the other one was Game of Thrones, kind of a storytelling game.
Okay.
And my buddy was like, oh, well, I already know about Until Dawn. I'm like, oh, have you played it? He's like, no, I just watched the YouTube video of the entire thing. I'm like, What? Like, what's the point? Like, what do you get out of? I didn't get into detail. Like, I was really upset because I was like, I don't understand that mentality. And I was like, what did you get out of that? Like, watching on YouTube a game that you could have just played yourself and did. And not to mention, there's like 25 different endings.
Oh,
depending
really?
On how you progress a story. So I'm like, you just saw one strand of a story.
Right.
Unless he just kind of sat there and watched all the different endings.
I mean, that's possible.
I would have been so upset. That wouldn't be mad. I don't get it. I don't understand people. Like Twitch. I don't understand Twitch either. I don't understand it. It's not a thing. I don't get it.
What is
like,
Twitch?
Where you sit there and watch other people play video games.
Oh.
And tabletop games. And
table. I don't get it. Why? Live your life.
I watch Magic tournaments on Twitch.
No.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Maybe Magic tournaments. That's okay.
Well.
But you can play that.
Is this like a YouTube channel?
No, it's its own thing.
Site.
It's its own site. Okay, because I'm like, I'm definitely guilty of like friends playing video games and me being there like, go friend, go!
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I don't think I could actually just be like, go person across the world, go!
You're not even doing that. You're not even allowed, you're just watching them.
I mean like from behind my computer screen, just cheering at this, you know, cheering at the TV.
If you are watching Twitch live streams, you can actually tell, go friend, go!
It's a little different.
It's not for me, but it's not for me. It's not a thing. I don't have that kind of time. I'd rather just play games myself or with my friends.
I feel like I have less time to do that.
And that's more why likely. Some people say that they watch Twitch because they don't have time for that, so therefore they watch Twitch. Which still just seems like a very sad existence, in my opinion. But that's just me. I'm sorry to all the Twitch fans out there.
Like,
we love you.
Because you don't have to have... Like, there's this whole, like, crazy thing about, like, oh, I don't have time to do this. I don't have time to do this. You know the people I hear say, like, oh, I don't have time to watch a full, like, hour and a half, 2 hour movie. And then, like, sit down and binge, like, a show for, like, 6 hours straight. I don't have, like, any time at all. And I played Fallout 3, New Vegas, and 4. All in probably like 1 hour increments.
Mm-hmm.
Like I played Fallout 4 for probably about 40 hours total.
Right.
And all in like 1 to 2 hour increments.
Mm-hmm.
So having time is just like, you can say you don't have time or you can
prioritize.
Yeah.
Or you can make time. I don't know. Everyone has a different life and there are different lifestyles, and I love and accept all lifestyles, but some are just not for me.
Maybe not all lifestyles.
Yeah, there's some that are a little.
How do you feel about Kim Jong Un lifestyle?
I mean, you know, Dennis Rodman's okay with it, so maybe I could be too.
We are at a strange place when Dennis Rodman becomes the barometer.
Oh man! All right. Well, I guess we should get into news.
Well, how about you?
Me?
Yeah. What are you?
Oh, well, I mean, I've been like tons of stuff weighing on my mind lately. So, just like career, finance. I've been thinking about moving to Denver as a possibility. But definitely still doing this podcast. But yeah, I think in September, I'm going to move, September 1st.
Really?
I'm going to head to Denver. Yeah, it's just, you know, Fort Collins is a great town, don't get me wrong, and there's a lot of amazing people here, without a question. But it doesn't have enough for me. Every time I go to Denver, I have, like, the best time ever. Really? I'm going today. I'm going after podcasting and some other stuff. Yeah, like, I just have way more fun. Every single time I go there, I have a blast. So I can either waste money getting hotels every weekend, or I can just live there.
Yeah.
So,
what are you doing in Denver later today?
I'm just gonna do some shopping, gonna get some dinner. Two of my friends from Fort Collins will come down with me. We'll go to the bars, we'll get some drinks, and we'll have a great time.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sounds like a solid Saturday.
Yeah, solid Saturday for sure. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. So, I'm just trying to figure out what the best move is. So, I feel like I'm always moving though. I'm like this nomad. But I moved to Colorado to move to Denver.
Right.
I just got kind of caught up in Fort Collins.
So a pit stop, if you will.
Yeah, for sure. So, anyways, that's my news. We'll see what happens.
It's big news.
It's big news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an audible gasp I can hear from all of our fans.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anyways. But Capes and Skies West isn't going anywhere.
Yep.
That's what matters.
Except up.
Except up. Oh. Nice.
We are all full of the puns.
Yep. Yes, we are.
All right.
So what do we have for news? What's going on? What's smack-a-lackin'? In the world.
Well, yeah. I don't really know how to broach this subject. So I think we should just do it.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
we should just do it.
So we're going to talk about Batman White Knight?
No, that's for a bit. That's for in a bit. But I was gonna say, Stan Lee's wife Joan Lee just died yesterday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it was from where we're at.
Yeah,
On Friday at the ripe old age of 93. So
wow.
So you can't say she didn't, you know, live her life.
Yeah. The worry there for, I think, some people might be that you see a lot of couples when one dies, the second dies, not too long after, just, you know, sadness and heartache and stuff like that.
That is true.
So, I mean, Stanley's a busy guy, so maybe that'll help a little bit there as well. And normally the husband dies before the wife as well.
Yeah, that is statistically true.
Right. So, yeah, no, but 93, good for them that they had a great run together for that long.
Yeah, that's a... They over 50 years together, right?
Well, that's crazy. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah,
well, that's
Man, I don't even know if I'm ready for that kind of commitment personally. 50 well, not, years?
Well, not yet.
Not yet.
I mean, you know, just wait until you find the right guy.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
settle down.
I'll keep looking at my watch and hopefully that'll happen.
Because your watch has 50-year increments. Yeah.
You're wearing a Mayan calendar.
The watch is waiting for this magical person that you are talking about that comes in on some kind of white horse that doesn't exist. So
it's not some kind of like Venus like watch that runs on the rotations of Venus or something like that.
I mean, it may as well based on how long I'm going to be single until I find someone. So
random stuff happens when it comes to relationships.
I suppose.
I feel like everybody who's single thinks that they're like, oh, like I'm going to be 93 by the time I find my partner, and then everybody who's in a relationship is like, this is going to last until I'm 93.
That's, you know, I'm waving my ring around.
Yes, your Green Lantern ring.
I always thought of it as like my entrance into the Matrix because it has like.
That's a really cool ring. I like the ring. I would get something like that because I like the band. Mine would be blue though. Yours is green, right?
The band is actually like gunmetal, and then it's black inset with green.
Okay. Yep.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah. We've digressed from, you know, a sad moment.
Yeah, but Stanley, our condolences go out to you and your wife, and we're sorry. I was going to make a joke about Betty White, but I'm not going to. Oh, but gosh, go back and listen to issue Betty number White. 1, 2, or 3, whichever one it was. I don't remember when I said the Betty White and Stanley comic bit, but it's in there somewhere.
Yeah. And Stanley, you can always come onto the show and talk to us about it if you want.
If you need some coping, we're more than happy to
help you. If you need somebody to lean on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Cajun Skies West. We'll take care of you.
Well, Nat, how about you? Got any news for us?
Sure. So I erroneously mentioned Batman White Knight a moment ago. So finally, Sean Murphy and DC Comics have announced their Sean Murphy's miniseries, Batman White Knight. I have been following Sean Murphy on Twitter, seeing all of the pre-production sketches that he's been allowed to put up. And yesterday, the announcement was made that it is a miniseries, and I believe its first issue will be out in October. But it's putting Batman in the villain role. I don't know what exactly that means, because Batman has been heavily featured in a lot of the concept work, a lot of the promotional artwork already. And it's obviously a Batman title, so it's not being called Joker White Knight. It's being called Batman White Knight. So I don't know if the story was going to be told through Batman's perspective, which would be very interesting if he is portraying the villain and is telling it from the villain's perspective, or the story is through the Joker's eyes and Batman is literally the villain. But either way, the story centers around Joker being cured of his insanity, and prior to that was obsessed with Batman. There's a promotional image that we looked at earlier that shows Joker's cell in Arkham, and is littered with Batman memorabilia that we know from our world. So posters from the movies, toys from the different Batmobiles throughout the ages, posters from the animated series, and Sean Murphy, definitely you can tell, was inspired by the animated series.
Mm-hmm.
But this looks really, really interesting to me. Sean Murphy's actually basing his Joker on Don Draper from Mad Men. So, you know, a debonair politician. So it looks like Joker and Harley are engaged or possibly even married in this story.
Mm.
So I'm really excited to see where this goes. This is something I've been anticipating for a long time. I think Sean Murphy has a really interesting edge. I'm curious to see his writing style on such a what could potentially be a mainstream project.
Mm.
So, his art's amazing.
Interesting.
Tokyo Ghost hardcover just came out last week. Pick it up. It's amazing.
Interesting.
What do you think, Patrick?
Well, Nat and I kind of got into this a little bit as we were talking before we started recording. And, you know, I was reading it last night in preparation for this, and it seemed really interesting, the idea that Batman would be the villain and Joker would be the good guy, to put it at this, you know, this juxtaposition from our normal idea of, like, their dynamic. But the more I was talking to Nat, the more I realized it's not actually that, like, different. Because, like, how many times in superhero cliches have you seen the whole, like, oh, you're just one bad day away from being me, or, you know, especially Batman being, I feel like he always walks this edge, and in the past he has, like, fallen off the deep end into this side of more vigilantism, like the bad side of it, especially, like, you know, as we progress more away from, like, this, like, bubblegum 50s era where he, you know, kind of started 40s, 50s, and into our modern world where vigilantism is kind of less and less acceptable socially.
Yeah.
Like, he's been put into that, he's been put into that more. And seeing the Joker as a politician is also not necessarily painting him in the best light, especially with a lot of our political cycles going on right now. So, I was really excited to hear that Batman and Joker were going to be switching places. That sounds like a really interesting thing. But to hear that, And it might still be pretty interesting, because if neither of them are good people, then that might make a really interesting story. But if Batman is still, like, this anti-hero, and the Joker is sort of, like, this lovable guy who comes off as a good guy, it'll just be interesting to see where it goes, I guess. I shouldn't make too many assumptions before.
I actually think I would, like, as a Batman fan, as Batman being my favorite superhero and one of my favorite characters in any form of literature, I would not necessarily want just the straight flip story where it's like we follow Joker and his life and he's this good guy and here comes the villainous Batman. Because for one, I don't want Batman to kill. Like, that's a really big issue for me. And, you know, that was one of the downers of Batman v Superman, was you have Affleck playing what was probably the best Batman and he's killing people. And it's like, okay, wait, that's against the tropes of the character. But I think it's more playing on how we view villainy and how you can persuade the common man. So you have somebody who's done horrible, horrific things in the Joker, but he's reformed now. And now he can use all of that visual like presence that people know and rise and become something more and then flip and turn the person who had vilified him, who he was obsessed with, into the villain. So he uses his words and all of a sudden everybody goes, hey, you know what? He's not just a vigilante. He's actually turning what is normal crime into the escalation, which has obviously been explored before. Like, that's one of the themes in Batman storytelling, is the fact that the villains become a reflection of him. His existence makes things worse in a way. But Gotham is so bad that it's kind of this counterbalance. Is it really that much worse? Would it just be just horrible, normal crimes without the supervillain sect if Batman wasn't there? Or is it legitimately worse because of his existence? So,
I think there are some things I would want out of this in order for me to really be accepting of this comic. So, yes, I think I would want Joker and Harley to be married, and I would want them to probably have a kid. And I'd want them to have, because they have a kid already in other versions and other multiverses. And for him to be portrayed as a family man, to really show that he really does care. I don't want him to revert back. That would piss me off, because there's this idea of, like, you can never be reformed. And that kind of, like, perpetuates in a lot of, like, the DC and even Marvel stuff, too. It's like, you can never be reformed. So it touches on, like, in real life, like, those who read those comics, like, probably don't trust people who are quote unquote reformed, right? Because like, oh, I know what reform means. I read comics,
right?
And you guys never are reformed. You guys always revert back to bad guys. So I'd like him to continue the arc for as long as possible, never reverting back to being the bad guy.
Well, and it's only an 8-issue miniseries, so it exists completely out of continuity. So there is the possibility that when all is said and done, Batman loses this story, and it really is Joker who prevails as a hero.
Right.
I mean, this is the first promotional material that has actually been leaked, the first time the name has been given to the title, so...
I'd be interested to see how Joker would handle the Batman villains currently. Like, because someone has to make the decisions. At the end of the day, Scarecrow is still a thing.
Right.
So, like, Joker, what are you going to do with Scarecrow? Are you going to put him in Arkham Asylum, or are you going to lock him up, or are you going to execute him? Like, what is your... I want to see that decision made by the Joker.
And Commissioner's been featured heavily. Commissioner Gordon has been featured heavily in the artwork. And it's hard to tell. A lot of the artwork that's been shown is black and white, so it's hard to see if maybe the characters... Because the way that Joker is being portrayed as reformed looks very similar to Bruce Wayne, so it's kind of hard to see which character we're actually looking at. There's one colored image that is Joker reformed with normal, like, flesh-toned skin with Harley, and Harley's wearing her colors, but she's in, like, more of a formal dress.
Should be interesting.
Yeah, I'll definitely check it out, nonetheless.
I'm all about it. I think it looks amazing.
Alright, any other news?
This was a big week for trailers, actually. So, I have a couple, So, firstly, the Inhumans trailer dropped.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually getting less. I was pretty psyched about it when I heard it was going to be a thing, but the trailer...
I didn't like the trailer. It did nothing for me.
The trailer... The best part about the trailer is all of the teleporting with...
Lockjaw.
Yeah, that's... that's done well.
Yeah. I'm still going to watch it, but, you know, if the storyline looks like... It looks it's going to be. I don't know if it'll be very...
Maybe we'll get some feedback and quickly change something. I don't know.
The problem with this for me, as, you know, my little Inhumans knowledge, is putting them in space and doing, like, sci-fi stories is really the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
So this screams we don't have the budget to do something in space, so the first thing we're going to do is... put them on Earth.
Yeah, and even the way they put them on Earth, it just didn't even feel right. It didn't feel...
Well, but I think they totally could do it, because, like, I like the Inhumans thing as being, like, this... They're kind of like the new mutants in a way. Like, you know, they come around... Like, mutants have already kind of been accepted begrudgingly by a lot of the people. And so, you know, they represent this new thing, and especially in a lot of the new Marvel arcs, they're, like, rounded up and put into prison camps and, like... you know, they represent this sect of society that can just be, like, vilified and, like, made the scapegoat for all this stuff. Like, they do a great job of that in S.H.I.E.L.D., I think, or Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the TV show, of, like, portraying the Inhumans as this threat that's worth eliminating because of A, B, and C reasons.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't...
Yeah, and... We'll see. We'll see what happens. We have time.
Medusa's hair still looks terrible. Girl,
you gotta do something girl, about that hair.
To defend myself, she looks like somebody at an amusement park wearing a red wig to play an Inhuman.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, it doesn't match the effects that we're seeing.
Personally, and this is, like, really, really, like, petty, it's too red. You know? It's like bright.
It's too bright.
It's like
red.
Almost orange.
Yes. It's almost, it's like costume. It's like costume, she has a very... It's costume red.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She has a very, like, it's more burgundy, I would say, in the comic. And I know this is such a, like, little subtle, like,
no, point. I think that, like, makes the difference, actually. Like,
in a society where Spider-Man Homecoming makes over $40 million on its Thursday release... This is a valid discussion to talk about somebody's hair being too red in this universe. This is important.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
it is very important.
MCU executive staff, if you're listening, you can always come here and talk to us about it.
Right?
More than happy to give some advice. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's too red, which makes it look not right on her.
It's like
her.
A cartoon.
It's
within,
a cartoon, yeah.
Yeah, the rest of the
world. Yeah. So anyways, we're not going to harp too hard on too much on Medusa's
hair. Because we're still
going
to watch it.
We're still going to watch it. Exactly.
I'm just not going to be running out to IMAX now to watch two episodes.
I know. I was definitely on the edge about that. I was like, should I go? Shouldn't I go? But now I'm like, I'm good. Unless, like, it's 2 hours of just Lockjaw teleporting around.
Then maybe.
To, like, J-pop music? That would be amazing.
Just a 2-hour montage of just teleporting around the world.
Other trailers.
This one is just kind of like a me and other underground things. I don't know if either of you ever watched Fooly Cooly.
Whoop! Yes, I have.
Okay, good.
No idea what this is.
FLCL.
FLCL is like a seminal underground anime. It's like, it's 6 episodes. There was 1 season of it. Years ago, it was announced that Toonami picked up the rights, and they were doing seasons 2 and 3. And gosh, that was like almost 2 years ago that they announced this. And then last week, they dropped the teaser trailer for it, and it looks awesome. Mm. So for those of you who don't know, Fooly Cooly or FLCL is pretty much this, like, it's a coming-of-age story, but it's absurdist, surreal, like, they fight, it's very, like, music-driven, too, like, they fight with electric guitars in it.
Okay.
And, it's very self-aware as an anime. It, like, constantly changes up styles, like, the characters, like, are seen in the trailers where they're just, like, sitting there, like, they're dressing trailers where they're just like, oh, those scenes are really hard to do, and, it's...
almost like a Deadpool kind of...
Almost like a Deadpool, but not, like, not for, like, the sake of a joke, more for the sake of, like, the themes, okay. I would say.
Okay.
And it's very thematic heavy coming of, like, there's just all these different ways of in which coming of age is sort of portrayed, whether it be through the flavors of the energy drinks that they drink, or the style of batting in a baseball game,
Feel like this sounds somewhat familiar, then I'm not sure. Only thing that sounds somewhat similar to that, it reminds me of, like, there's this anime where something comes out of this guy's forehead.
So these giant monsters, robots come out of his forehead, and then they have to beat them with the electric guitars.
Okay, okay.
And
crazy action.
Crazy action. And also the fact that, like, the soundtrack to it is, like, one of the best soundtracks ever. The Pillows, a Japanese, like, garage rock band.
And they're gonna back,
be,
right?
Yeah, they're okay. gonna be, so the teaser trailer is just, like, a Pillows song with a bunch of, like, flashes of, like, different scenes. And, yeah, they're really good.
Is it on Netflix, or is it on Toonami?
It's not on Netflix.
It's Toonami, right? It's Cartoon Network?
It's a Cartoon
Network.
Okay,
it's a Cartoon Network. Okay.
The original one, I think, came out in the early 2000s. I don't want to put a date on it, but it's been over 10 years since the first season.
I was in college, because I remember studying at LCL as part of, like, some of the just animation studies, just looking at this, because it was... I mean, batshit, you know?
Like, yeah. I mean, like, the fact... There's, like... And because, like, the first and last episode, how they have, like, the manga scenes.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of weird in that it wasn't a manga before it was a show, but there's two scenes in it that just, like, drop into manga style with, like...
Right.
This, like, headbanging hard rock song, and it's just, like, panning through, it's... like, the pages of a manga.
It was originally Studio Gainax, right? The same company that did Evangelion?
I'm not entirely sure, but that makes sense because, like, the director of it and, like, the writer, not the writer, but, like, three of the top crew members, including the director, worked on Evangelion.
Okay.
And the character, like, the head character designer, stuff like that.
Watching the trailer for 2 and 3, I have, like, because it's so frenetic and it's just really fast snippets of things, I'm wondering if we're seeing the characters from the original, like, older. Because it looked like that might have been Nauta.
I think there is... So, I was reading it's supposed to be... take place around a high school girl.
Okay.
So, Nauta is supposedly not the main character, although it looks like he might be in it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so... But the girl might be the class rep from... I forget her name from the show. And then it looks like there's going to be another Haruko-style alien in it. Mm-hmm.
Well, and then what was the TV head?
Yeah, the robot.
Yeah, because it looks like...
And he gets an upgrade, too.
I was wondering if we were seeing, like, his real form...
Well, I was thinking it was more of his, like, grown-up form, since they're all in high school now, and, you know, they've grown up, like, so will this robot, of course, for some reason, right. have grown up, too.
Why not?
Because...
Well, second stage of coming of age, you know, after, you know, you hit a certain point in life, and the next evolution that's still, you know, what the hell am I doing?
because FLCL1 was, you know, the classic, like... puberty, like, preteen into teenage, right. coming of age. And so this looks like it's going to be the high school, you know, high school into sort of, quote, real life coming of age that it's going to be. And, of course, you know, when that happens, like shit gets turned up to 11.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
knowing
for sure,
and knowing Fooly Cooly, like they can turn it up to freaking 11,000 if they
right.
need to.
I wouldn't be surprised if there was at one point in time an amp with an 11,000 that gets cranked to it.
Yeah,
literally.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I would not be surprised at all.
This would be good. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a good trailer, so it's definitely mm-hmm. getting you excited.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I've been looking forward to this for, you know, this is my white knight. Honestly, I've been looking forward to this since they announced it years ago. This is, yeah, probably one of my favorite shows
right.
in general. And it's only 6 episodes, so. Yeah.
It's everybody, not a huge investment.
Yeah, everybody can watch it in one afternoon.
I think it's available mm-hmm. on one of the streaming services. I want to say that it's Hulu still has it.
Yeah.
Hmm. All right.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, other trailers?
And then one final theatrical trailer. We got a teaser trailer for this a while back, but they just released the theatrical trailer for the Death Note.
What? That's right.
Netflix movie.
The best thing ever that I'm sure everyone has watched.
Yeah.
Death Note the anime. I can't even imagine one person that would have not watched Death Note yet.
Everyone who is anyone has watched this show. And in fact, I would argue if you haven't seen Death Note, you're probably not an anime fan. Isn't that right, Matt?
This trailer was really good, and it made me want to go and watch this anime called
again.
Death Note.
Again?
For the first time.
You mean again?
Oh,
what?
For the first time.
They're just enjoying watching me squirm in my chair right now. I have never seen Death Note. I watched this trailer, though, having never seen the series, and I really enjoyed the trailer. It did make me want to stop and watch the series first. People are so passionate about this, and conversations I've had before, the concept seemed a lot more interesting than what the, like, surface level artwork I had seen. I thought it was going to be more fantasy based and not
mm-hmm.
what you guys kind of kind of described it as a crime story, really.
Crime drama.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can totally, I thought that too initially, because, you know, all the posters and
mm-hmm.
DVDs and stuff, they all have, you know, Light, this human kid with Ryuk, who's a Shinigami or a god
mm-hmm.
of death, and, you know, it looks very, like, high fantasy-esque.
Right.
And, you know, I think everybody thinks that going in, like, they just hear Death Note, you know, they see Ryuk, like, oh, it's gonna be about, like, superpowers and, like, killing people
right.
and
demons
stuff.
Demons and gods.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, and that stuff, but it's very, very, it's almost, you know, it's sci-fi, I'd say it's more sci-fi in the sense that it's more to, like, use these like fantastic elements to reflect our like modern society.
Yeah, I think ultimately it's just an opportunity to play an extremely intelligent anime and allow you to like, because normally that sort of like intelligent puzzle stuff doesn't really get a lot of people like, maybe it's okay. But this, the way that they added all the elements for you to basically solve a puzzle from beginning to the end. And you are so mm-hmm. into it because it's kind of this fantasy demon god
right.
situation happening that you're actually okay with the idea that you're actually just watching a puzzle movie or
mm-hmm.
a puzzle show. You're just trying to solve a puzzle the entire time.
One
yeah.
of the things that I got from the trailer was that, and you know, I could be completely wrong off base from the original source material, was that the lead character Light, or is it L who has the book?
Light has the butt.
Light, is that his motivation seemed to be to actually use the Death Note to make the world a better place, to be almost
mm-hmm.
like super heroic and like
mm-hmm.
I can take these people out in a way that nobody else can. And once again, that was something that I just never got from, maybe I watched the wrong trailers for the anime back
mm-hmm.
when it was first released,
mm-hmm.
or I tend to lean heavy on sci-fi giant robot anime, like that's
mm-hmm.
really what I enjoy
yeah.
the most. Well, I psychological giant robot because Evangelion still haunts me at night. But so it really, I really enjoyed the trailer, and I really felt like it was something that I wanted to watch. And then I got kind of nervous because I'm like, is this going to be enough that you can do in like a 2-hour film, mm-hmm. or is it going to really do a disservice? Now I do have a question for the both of you, since you're the resident experts of the anime.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Were there anything like with the whitewashing controversies or the change in location? Just based on the trailer, does that feel like it still feels like the right show?
I would say it's not necessarily Japan specific. There's a couple things that make it a very Japanese show, other than the fact that it is an anime. Like, Shinigami's, the gods of death, are figures from Shintoism, I believe. They are, like, Japanese mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mythological figures. And the fact that the only reason I would say not necessarily is because initially it's a very international show. Like, L is the greatest detective in the world who comes in to solve these mysterious deaths, and a lot of it has to do with America sends in the CIA and the FBI to also investigate this, alongside the Japanese National Defense Force and the police mm-hmm. And that kind of stuff. And especially in the second season, it gets very international as opposed to just localized in Japan.
Yeah. My only thing I would add is that I think that the version that they're showing, which are they're not in Japan anymore, right? Or are they?
No, they're in the Northwest.
Okay, which is what I thought.
Portland or Seattle area.
I'm okay with it because I think it's going to give it the right feel. Because I've seen movies that where if it was kind of more Japan focused, it might be too campy.
Okay.
For me, whereas I think this is going to be the right level of like sad, depressed Northwest weather kind of situation okay. that I think will make this movie or make it perfect.
So you feel like that setting might actually?
I think the setting might make it better.
Do you think it's going to appeal better to the American non-anime fan? Like, do you think the concept is maybe too high even for that?
Oh, I think absolutely it would. Mm-hmm. It's going to appeal more, like, and I mean, this is the reason that whitewashing is a thing in the first place, is just to, I mean, like, because how easy would it have been to get, because I've never really heard of this guy who's playing, Light. And so, like, how easy would it have been to get a Japanese actor to play that same mm-hmm. role?
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. even here in America, even if it was still set in Seattle, it would still be, like, almost as easy to get.
A Japanese-American person.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. To play that character. And I think that's really what takes people away from animes. It is like twofold. One, it seems kind of like watching a foreign film mm-hmm. almost. Right. And nobody, once you get into the genre, you're like, this is not like, you know, watching like a black and white French film where,
right.
you know, people are staring at odd angles at each other. And then two is like, I think just animation in general puts people off. It feels like Nat's over here shaking his fist in the air, but I think the fact that it is going to be a live action movie set mm-hmm. in America mm-hmm. will invite a lot of American fans and potentially other Western countries.
I think at the end of the day though, we're all thinking the same thing. Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball, and Avatar: The Last Airbender. We're all thinking that. We're all thinking about Avatar and Dragon Ball right now as we're thinking about this movie, and it's making us sad. Oh, so the potential for this to tank horribly is high because it's already been shown that animes don't translate.
Well, so here's
plus, and then another thing that I'm really worry about too is Netflix does not have a good track of original animes. I've watched a bunch of their original animes and they just are not mm-hmm. up to their par.
So
par at all.
I think it's important to note that for the most part, Netflix, even though it says Netflix original, isn't the company that's producing the product. Mm. Well, okay. They are producing in the financial sense. They are not actually the production studio. So, okay. As far as anime is concerned, it's being animated somewhere else, more than likely either in Korea or Japan. And then Netflix is putting their name on it for distribution more than anything else, and probably put the finances behind the studio to get the product done. And that's the way with animation in general, usually. But I want to get back to Dragon Ball and to Avatar for a moment.
Yeah, you can't throw that in.
Yeah. I was trying to let's keep going, guys.
There is a moment that I think Dragon Ball, maybe we finally caught up to the technology that could make that film okay. There is absolutely zero excuse for The Last Airbender. When the production started in Nickelodeon Studios here in the U.S., all of the character names and designs were done here, and then the animation studios in Korea did the animation. It's still an American-produced show. How do you adapt something that has literally was made here incorrectly? Mm-hmm. I love Avatar,
how to get that
Last Airbender.
How to get that rant out?
Ridiculous. You know, M. Night Shyamalan.
Who was a fan? Like, that was the part of the reason that he got involved with it was, you know, he had a wall scroll in his entryway of the original characters from Avatar: The Last Airbender. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, well, he watched a different show.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently,
clearly,
it's unfortunate.
But Death Note. Pretty excited, actually.
Yeah.
I'm
the anime.
Definitely gonna watch it.
I want to check out the movie, but I don't know. Like, I'm not sure where to start. Like, should I just watch the first season of the anime
Good question.
The film?
Yeah, I don't know for sure.
It's gonna be on Netflix, right? This is not an actual theatrical release. It's a Netflix original.
Netflix does have the show currently too.
Oh, other question, and this might sort of ruffle the feathers of some of the listeners, but should I watch Death Note subbed or dubbed?
Ooh, that's actually a good one. I would say I go back and forth on subs versus dubs.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, subs are the way to go, and I would say in Death Note especially, it's much better to watch it subbed.
Okay.
Just because, for two reasons. Light and Ryuk have amazing voices.
Okay.
Ryuk being the Shinigami, Light being the main protagonist with the Death Note. He's in the sub version in Japanese, Light is very calm, very collected, you can just tell the intelligence in his voice when he talks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the dubbed version, he sounds like a whiny teen.
Mm-hmm.
He sounds like a really self-righteous and whiny teen. And then also Ryuk, too, in the Japanese version, his voice is just so great. He just doesn't care about humans at all. Like, the only reason he's on Earth in the first place is A, because he has to be, and B, because he's bored.
Okay.
And then, and so, he has this very listless, very, sort of somewhat monotone voice that's just very engaging.
Yeah, and this is not to be racist, and I love Murica, but only in Japanese culture, and only in their tone, and when having subtitles, they sound so intelligent.
Okay.
When it's dubbed, they sound a little dumb. I'm like, I'm sorry, you're not nearly as intelligent in English as you are in Japanese.
Okay.
It's just, they sound way more intelligent.
Yeah, and for a show that's about the two smartest people on Earth, pretty much trying to outsmart each other, it's very important to have that.
Yeah.
Alright. Yeah.
So this is one I can't have on the background. This is going to be straight up focus on it.
Focus on it. And it's really a movie that you should, it's one movie. It's a show you should focus. Every detail matters. Every little snapshot of something matters.
That's true. And it's, especially the first season, there's so much going on, and it's all mind games and mental manipulation. So if you're just, you have to be paying attention to it to get it, or you're just won't see it, and you'll just be like, oh, why are they all doing this? I don't know, and I don't care.
Yeah. So, anyways, I think, yeah, watch it subbed. Watch it subbed.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, should we continue the news? I know we're kind of crunching time now here.
I'm going to talk about Legacy really quick. So we've talked about the Marvel Legacy event for a few episodes now, or a few issues. And the preview art for Legacy number one has been released, and we have the Avengers from 1 million BC
that
have been revealed. And this sounds pretty sweet, so let's go through this quick roster here.
That's hilarious.
We have Odin, who is in possession of Mjolnir, that's pretty sweet. The original Iron Fist.
Right.
Starbrand. The original Ghost Rider, so apparently the Spirit of Vengeance has been jumping from person to person throughout time.
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
This makes my heart like... Agamotto himself, so Doctor Strange is the original Sorcerer Supreme, the Eye of Agamotto that he wears.
That's cool.
And then the first Black Panther. I'm getting a little goosebumpy. I think that sounds really sweet. I'm looking at some of the Legacy solicits and getting a little concerned. But as far as the intro title, I think that's going to be something that's going to be special and ready to check out. So yeah, look for that one.
Nice. That's awesome. Anything else for news?
No, just I'm seeing crossovers in the Legacy event, and that's making me upset.
Crossovers? What do you mean?
Like storylines jumping between titles. And that I think when you're talking about Marvel sort of refreshing the entire brand and making it a jumping on point for new readers, having the crossover into books that you may not necessarily want to read isn't the right thing to do. I don't want to read X-Men Gold. I'm enjoying X-Men Blue for what it is. I don't want to read a four-part storyline that jumps between the two titles.
But is that because there hasn't been enough history to have time to have... So my assumption would be that if you have time to read your own title, and you have like 5-10 issues in, and then there's a crossover, that it might be okay? Okay.
The first four issues of the Legacy... the Legacy event.
Sure, so, right. Because crossovers are good if they're done well. So my only one that I even actually care about, which is Onslaught. Onslaught, I feel like they nailed it for a crossover event. Like, I feel like they did great in all the different titles.
They did.
Tying it together to this one big event.
And I felt like in Onslaught, you didn't have to read everything.
Mm-hmm. Right, correct. You didn't.
And that is what concerns me, is that you're going to
have
to
read. Versus it impacting.
Right. We're a crossover that hits other events.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. And then you have, like, Onslaught number one, Onslaught number two, whatever the crossover may be. And then you can read these ancillary books if you want that little bit of flavor that's extra. There's Worlds Collide is Avengers and Champions. And to get the full story, you have to read Avengers as part one, Champions as part two, Avengers as part three, Champions as part four.
Sure.
I don't necessarily want to read those books because I read a book for the creative teams and the story that's concurrent in that. Oftentimes, especially for me, I'm an artist guy. I want to read the books by that certain artist, and I may have not like the tone and the feel of that the other sense. Book.
I mean, I guess they're doing that more and more now. I mean, that's what they did with The Button, right? You couldn't read The Button unless you read Flash and Batman.
And maybe it'll feel like that, where it's only like those four issues that are real quick, and you know, you get them done in 2 months, and it's not this crazy drawn-out thing. Because I see stuff like Secret Empire where it just looks like it's everywhere. And, you know, tightening it up, making it more accessible would be a positive, in my opinion. And that seems to be going in the wrong direction. So.
All right. Did you guys want to get one or so review in?
Yeah.
Before we close it out?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Patrick, you're up.
So, okay. So, for my review, I'm gonna do the Mighty Thor.
Seems like two people are gonna do the Mighty Thor.
Oh, you haven't ever seen that?
I'm just gonna argue with whatever Patrick says.
There you go.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I disagree with Nat, firstly. So, this was a really interesting issue. So, I'm a huge fan of the Mighty Thor, not so much of the OG Thor.
No.
Personally, I like the idea, and I'm a huge fan of mythology and all that stuff. I feel like the Mighty Thor with the whole Jane Foster breast cancer subplot, not really subplot, I want to say overtones, probably a better word.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's such a compelling storyline there, and they've really been bringing it back in these past few issues recently. Jason Aaron has been really killing it. And so we've been getting to see, like, this, like, the breast cancer-ridden Jane Foster with her headscarf, and she's very skeletal, mm-hmm. And really coming and really fighting this idea of, does she want to be Jane Foster and die as a human, or become Thor forever and ever and die as Jane Foster, pretty much. So either way, she's going to die.
Right.
And she's coming to terms with that.
Gotcha.
Like, how does she want, how does she want to die? And I feel like this is a little reminiscent of euthanasia in a way. Mm. Like, does she want to, like, does she want to live out her life with cancer, or does she want to supposedly pull the plug on herself?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is really heavy. And like,
so wait, is staying as Thor pulling the plug on herself, or what is staying as Thor gonna do?
So pretty much, like, if you, because if she becomes Thor, then she won't be Jane Foster anymore.
Gotcha.
Right? She
gotcha.
Can't live her life as Dr. Jane Foster, mm-hmm. who's, you know, a senator for Earth on the Asgardian Council and do all these things that Jane Foster does. She would just be Thor.
Right.
You know, which, right. you know, technically she'd still be alive, but she wouldn't be the person she was anymore.
Sure. Okay.
So, I guess it's not like, it's not a very clear-cut, like, parallel there, but
sure.
I feel like it can kind of be read that way.
She's kind of given up on her other life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. And not only is that a real downer, but here we also have, in this issue, number 20, we also have another ridiculously sad part where Volstagg, a few other Asgardians, and a light elf
and a shield agent, right?
And a shield, yeah. Hmm. Roz Solomon all go to Alfenheim, I believe. They go to Niflheim.
Nedivellir.
Nedivellir. The dwarves world. They visit a camp of light elf refugees from the war that's going on currently, and there's all these starving children,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, old people and all this stuff, and Volstagg tries to console them and whatnot, and then it just gets, the camp is attacked, these kids die in his arms.
What?
He's
no.
Just yeah.
Kneeling there, like,
that's
with,
too sad.
Yeah, it is super sad. He's just like trying to help him, and then he's just there, like, kneeling with this look of utter dejection on his face. Just, oh man, it's.
All right, I'll take a look at that and read that just for that alone.
Yeah, not only do we have this incredibly sad Jane Foster storyline, but we have, like, this guy who's typically the happy-go-lucky sort of guy of the group.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's also losing hope in life.
And they're painting an impending war, right, amongst all of the realms,
mm-hmm.
that there's unrest, and some of the peaceful cultures are basically just going to be overwhelmed by the negative counterpoints. Like, they talk about the frost giants versus the fire giants?
Well, it's already been happening, kind of.
Okay.
Like, the dark elves have been, like, starting this war against them. That's why these light elf refugees are on
sense.
The dwarf world in the first place, is because the dark elves just, like, destroyed Alfenheim.
Okay.
So it's pretty much, like, got burned to the ground. And now, so the war is slowly progressing throughout the tree of existence in the Thor space universe. And yeah, it's getting really rough.
Yeah. Matt, what do you think about it?
So I specifically went out of my way to sort of read things I hadn't been reading. And Thor, the reason Thor came up for me was the fact that the War Thor was being revealed in this issue.
Mm.
So there's been, Jason Aaron is really crafting a giant epic in Thor. Mm-hmm. It's been since the God Butcher storyline in, mm-hmm. I believe the book was just called Thor at that point, to the then Jane Foster Thor story, to also the Unworthy Thor. So all of this has been one epic storyline that he's been going through, and in the Unworthy Thor, they reveal that the Ultimate Thor hammer is now in our realm, and there's been promotional art where you see that there is another Thor.
Right. It's not Odin's son.
It's not Odin's son. He did not choose it. He said that was somebody else's hammer.
Hmm.
So should we go into the spoiler territory? Like, who it is?
I don't know. I'll let you, since this is your part of the review, I'll let you figure out what you want to do.
Alright, so we'll pop it in the comments. We'll say that there are spoilers for the books. This centers on Volstagg for a reason. Seeing the horrors and experiencing what he experienced, he's picking up the hammer.
Nice.
So this loss, the pain that he sees, has said that he is the War Thor. So... Wow. Volstagg is now going to be wrapped in the thick of it. Also, there's something about that whole idea that made me feel very Doctor Who, you know? Like, there's these different versions of the same character existing, and, you know, they're going to come together and be something greater.
Right.
I'm really, like, all the stuff with Jane Foster, it makes me very, like, makes my heart hurt. You know, there's cancer in my family, and just watching... A little bit, like, I don't read this book, and I'm going to now. I'm going to go backtrack and read this whole epic because this is it's really, really well written, and you feel really invested, and it feels big.
Yeah,
and but the Jane Foster stuff, like, I want her to be around. I want her to stick around and be part of this battle.
Yeah,
whatever's coming, like, I really feel like she's so at the center of it that it just. It's going to be unsatisfying if she's not there in some form, but I have to read all of it now because I want to know where this goes.
It's interesting because anytime that I've picked up the book, just to pick it up, I'm like, oh, let me just see what's happening with the female Thor. It's like the most amazing issue ever. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll pick up the One Phoenix one, I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. And I can only imagine if I had picked this one up too, I'd have been feeling the exact same way.
I think it's Jason Aaron. I think he just knows, and I've said this before, he seems to understand what an individual issue structure is supposed to be as part of a bigger whole.
Well, I think, I think that's such a great point you touch on, and, like, the different arcs going around, like, Unworthy Thor, Thor, Mighty Thor, and there was one particular sequence of panels that really stood out to me in this issue, and it's very, very small, but he understands the cinematic qualities of this. They're just, it's Jane Foster, this one, yeah, Jane Foster and Odinson, they're just talking, and they're in the middle of this three-panel sequence, framed by Mjolnir on one side and the unworthy Thor's hammer on the other side. And as they're talking, it does the, like, it's focused in the on the Jane Foster Thor in the background with the foreground blurred out. And then that just swaps. You have the Jane Foster and Thor blurred out with the focus on the two hammers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just such a familiar cinematic, like, sequence right there. And to see it translated into comics like this is very subtle, but it makes such a difference.
Well, and it's this juxtaposition, like, what does this mean? Because the framing, you know, it's been Jane is on the side of Mjolnir, or traditional Mjolnir, and Odin's son has been on the side of the Ultimate's Mjolnir, and he doesn't possess a hammer at this point in time. The original Thor is not powered with, you know, the God of Thunder. So this hammer being over to the right hand side, and, you know, them falling together and the two hammers being present, but it's this weird, they're enclosed by the hammers, as mm-hmm. if to say, is this relationship only there because of the world? Like, right, it's a really weird, right. And then the fact that that hammer then doesn't go to the Odin mm-hmm. son, so what mm-hmm. does it mean overall? And
right.
Yeah, there's where this story ends will be interesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, it's a smart book, and Jason Aaron, like I said, is doing a fantastic job. Yeah. So I like mm-hmm. where it's headed. So I'm going to save my 3 for the 0.5 issue. So I guess we can wrap it up here. Yeah, and I'll do the 5.5. We'll do more.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up here then. Say goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.